Okay, this wasn't going to be the official topic, but...
We're on it again.
We're having a great conversation, so welcome back to Mark Wade is... No, wait, 15 Minutes with Wade.
That's right.
With...
Mark Wade, who is here podcasting with...
Daphna.
From the Boom Studios offices. And yes, we were having a little conversation before, so Daphna said, we should be recording this. And it was really about the notion of adaptations and the notion of how...
The story changes for the medium, or how you tell the same story.
My example was back a few years ago, somebody was doing a Kingdom Come audiobook. They were working off the novelization or whatever, and it was a painful experience because it was, with all due respect to the fine people involved, it was not anything to be terribly proud of. I'm sure it turned out that it was very much targeted for a much younger audience. It was
Kingdom Come?
No, the audiobook.
No, that's what I'm saying. But yeah. They thought Kingdom Come would make a great sort of like Saturday morning.
Not exactly, but it was. But you.
It's
couldn't...
about teenagers beating up on old dudes.
I know, but it was. No, I know.
It's like beating them with a walker.
But it wasn't really.
That's a lesson I want to teach my kids.
There you go. It wasn't really that. It was so much that it wasn't like they were deliberately playing it to children. It was more that they.
Assumed it was.
It was very the delivery, the direction was all. It was very juvenile. It was really like if you're over the age of 15, you can't listen to this stuff with a straight face. There were a couple of things that again they did as good a job as they could. But this gets back to what we were talking about. Part of the problem was that the guy who was liaising between Alex Ross and myself and the guys who were doing the audio adaptation. For instance, the audio guys wanted to move some scenes around, and the liaison was like, "Oh no, you can't do that because you got to follow the scene structure in Kingdom Come." And I stepped in and go, "No, you absolutely don't. The only reason the scenes are in a certain order in Kingdom Come is because I have to end on page 45 every month. I have 45 pages. You have to hit that mark. If I had written Kingdom Come as one 180 page graphic novel without consideration to chapter breaks.
And then the page turns and how you set up like your plot each issue.
Right.
And
so anything you want to do to move around. And also, so that's consideration one. Like if you're adapting the story into another medium, for the love of God, use what makes the medium work, Zach. And
have you seen, however, the Under the Hood?
No, I haven't.
What they did was, and it was interesting because what Watchmen had was this fake news periodicals, and really played with the medium of print.
Right.
It brought these artifacts from this alternate universe into the comic, which is a heck of a lot of fun. But what was really interesting about the Under the Hood thing is they restructured all that material as a fake doc. I cannot pronounce this word. Documentary.
Yes.
Did I say it right?
Documentary. That's
my first time.
All right. Congratulations.
And they did like the fake old newsreels and the talking heads and the interviews, and it really works where as an artifact from the book versus the movie.
Yeah.
Because it reads in that same spirit of tone of playing with the medium, of playing with the message, of presenting this glimpse or this artifact of an alternate universe in something that is accessible in the real world.
Excellent. That's the way you do it. You take advantage of the medium. The other humbling thing, and this is a side note, but the other very humbling thing about the audio adaptation of Kingdom Come was that there is dialogue that you write for the page that is not meant to be spoken out loud. A lot of times you hear people give the advice that when you're writing dialogue, what you should do is you should say it out loud to see if it scans, see if it sounds right. And that's kind of a good rule, but it's not always the best rule because you can't read Raymond Chandler out loud either without giggling, but it's some of the best language in the written
video. Well, but your internal voice always manages to soften the unreality of what you're reading. You always find some way in your, like, brain as you're reading to justify what's on the page.
Right, it's, exactly. Also, you're not writing for radio. You're not writing for television. You're not writing for the spoken voice. You're writing for the page. And it doesn't excuse the fact that some of the dialogue in Kingdom Come was perhaps a little pompous and overblown, but the point is that it was written with the best of intentions for the page. And hearing some of this stuff spoken out loud, you could have had Sir John Gielgud and Sir Ian McKellen read this stuff, and it still would have come out clunky and overblown. So, and yet they were so faithful to the dialogue, and it's funny. Like I was there. There's a school of thought that says no. You should be as faithful as you possibly can to the source material.
Whereas, but then why have the source material?
Why have the source material? Whereas my argument was no. Do exactly the opposite. Do what makes it work. I don't know. That was the thinking there. It was actually an interesting experience. They did. We had done a novelization at the same time. My job was to read it. It was actually a really good novelization. There was a guy named Elliot Magan, who was my favorite comic book writer of the 1970s. He'd written Superman. He'd written a couple of novels for Superman called Last Son of Krypton and Miracle Monday, which are to this day my two favorite Superman stories of all time.
Are they like pocketbook novels?
They're prose novels.
I think I read The Last Son of Krypton.
God, Last Son was so good. It was the one where Albert Einstein is essentially the.
I think so. It was at public library as a kid.
The concept that I love behind it was that one of the many concepts I love behind it. We're completely off topic. It doesn't matter. Is Elliot did this thing where he observed that if Jor-El were going to send his son to Earth. And make some sort of, like he was going to make some sort of preliminary contact with Earth to set some sort of beachhead here, contact someone on our planet to be
prepared.
So who would he go to? He would go to Albert Einstein, because on Krypton, the idea of science is a little more important than the idea of humanity. Whereas on Earth, ideally, the dynamic is reversed, mm-hmm. that our humanity is a little more important to us than our science. So in the novelization, he makes contact with Albert Einstein, who realizes the same thing and arranges for the Kents to be on the scene when the rocket shows up.
Oh, really?
Yes. Because Albert Einstein knows that if I raise your child, he will be the most,
analytical.
Yeah, exactly. But he won't have, I don't have the capacity to teach him what he really needs to survive on Earth, which is heart.
Humanity and heart.
Which is not necessarily something you need to survive on Krypton, but it is something you need to survive on Earth. Anyway, that was just one of the little things about that novel that I really love. Go to Amazon.com. They're not still in print, but I'm sure you can find them. So, Last Son of Krypton and the sequel, Miracle Monday, which was even better. Anyway. So Elliot had written these things, and they were my template for who Superman is. And so I love the idea of being able to return the favor then, years later, when we were looking for somebody to do the novelization of Kingdom Come, which was going to be a lot more work than I could handle, because if you strictly novelize Kingdom Come, it would be, 112-page book. I mean, it would be the thinnest novelization ever, because there's a lot of story there, but there's really only like 20 or 25 scenes in Kingdom Come. It's not that much. What you have to do is you have to dig. You have to add things. You have to go and...
Behind their heads, what they're thinking.
Yeah, and feel free to add scenes. Feel free to add entire characters, entire conflicts. Just do something to pump it up. And Elliot did a great job with that. As a matter of fact, he added so much that, once more, the liaison between that end of it and Alex and I kept stepping in and going, well, no, you're too much off book. And I'm like, no, let him do what he wants to do. He's writing a novel. If he wants to move scenes around, if he wants to change this character to that character, if he wants to, if he wants to change venue here or whatever,
which is strange because that's half the fun of the big two comics is this open universe where everyone can play.
Yeah,
and so it's nice to see that that thought process carry through. It's like, yeah, it's a universe. You can
do put other.
Exactly. It's a sandbox. Play with it.
Just here's I know what the story of Kingdom Come is. As long as you're telling the story of Kingdom Come. Tell it however you want to tell it. I don't care. And Elliot did a great job. That novelization was really well done. And it was. And what I like about it is that it's at least 50% new material. Like,
was that a surreal experience? Like watching that.
Yeah. Kind of... Like reading these chapters, going, I didn't think of that. I didn't think. Well, that's pretty
that's
cool.
That's kind of cool.
It's weird reading your own story and being in suspense. That's pretty cool. So Elliot did that. And again, we're back to that notion of that's the process of adaptation. So. At some point, they decided to do the audiobook adaptation. It wasn't of Kingdom Come, but it was mostly of Kingdom Come, the comic, but they also wanted to take pieces of Kingdom Come, the audiobook, a little bit, or of the novelization a little bit. And that was just, that was painful. Because like I said, the script was a little too faithful to the dialogue. The one upside to it was that we went into the recording studio one day. And
did you record a voice from up there?
Yes, in fact, I did. I asked... They said, what do you want to do? Like, just a little bat. I didn't mm-hmm. have one of the ongoing characters. I didn't want to play
one of the waiters in
Batman
the cafe.
Or whatever. Exactly. What I did was I said, they said, what do you want to do? I said, here's the line I want to deliver. It's my five favorite words in the English language. And these are the ones I want to deliver. So I'm the guy who says, look, up in the sky. I'm very pleased with that. So my big Southern twang. To my ear, it stands out like a sore thumb when I listen to that thing. It's, again, not to denigrate the fine people who worked on this thing. I think that they did the best with what they could do. I think that they were probably under a little bit too stringent a direction to not be experimental and not feel free to adapt to the medium. But you have to adapt to the medium. This gets back to what we were talking about with the difference between a 22-page comic and an 88-page graphic novel, or a 15-page story told in chapters, and, you know, 150-page graphic novel that's not in chapters.
Or a story told one page at a time online versus something that's told, like, all in one chunk.
The single most difficult thing about writing comics, I find to this day, is the fact that you have to hit the bottom of every page, and you have to hit page 22. And you can't, like, I when I've worked in movies and when I worked on TV and animation, it's so relaxing and so freeing because within limitations, within sort of like, you know, sort of like an instinctive limitation, you can kind of let your scenes run as long as they need to run. I don't have to worry if I'm writing 3 pages of dialogue for a film where that three, I don't have to worry about ending exactly at the bottom of page 3, if you see what I'm saying. But with comics, half the battle is always, how do I tell my story and fit it into 22 pages
as efficiently
exactly
as possible?
Not 21 and not 23. And how do I hit the bottom of every page? I can't, you know, how do I
make... Do you think that's sort of almost an editing process in and of itself? You know, when good writers or writers that become popular, the books balloon as they get towards the end and get more popular because the editor is like, okay, I'm hands off.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, there's something in the force structure that forces you to edit yourself.
I agree.
Choose what's really important. And
I agree. It's what I've said about comics all along, is that you have to pick every moment. Like, you're taking snapshots of the moment. You don't have time to screw around. You've got 22 pages. And your audience will not be very patient with you if you take 6 pages to tell a scene that could be done in 2 panels. Everything counts in comics, even more so than in any other medium, because you've just paid $4 for this thing that's going to take you 6 minutes to read, so you better get a lot out of it. That's a big part of the art form, but it is tough. I mean, really, there have been many, many times when it takes me an extra 2 or 3 days to deliver a script, not because I can't figure out how to write it. I've written it, or at least, you know, have it outlined pretty well, but I don't know how to rearrange the scenes and hit the beats so that it still comes out at 22 pages, or so that every page ending feels like a page ending. So,
page endings.
Page ending. Or, you know, that you get to the end of page 22 and it feels like there's a cliffhanger or something to bring you back next issue, which you can't just write, like, and you hit page 22 and you run out of pages and you stop.
Mid-word, mid-sentence, mid-panel.
My job would be a lot easier if you could do that. So that's the tough part of the job, and I wish I had more tips on how to do it, but it's really just instinctive. It's just, I've done it literally a thousand times now. I mean, when I first started doing comics, I would, you know, rule out a piece of paper and I would draw the fake panels on it, and I would try to figure out exactly how many words would fit in every panel, and I would sweat. And now I just sit down and I start page 1, panel 1, because I kind of know by this point instinctively how to do this, but it's still a pain.
So you don't really think, because that's my hardest, you know, every comic fan has tried to write their own comic script. Let's not joke here.
Yeah.
You don't work in comics not having aspirations of some weird, insane grandeur, but do you obsess over the mechanics of it, or is that something that's so natural at this point it's a reflex?
It is.
Like the page turn and the panel count and the pacing.
No, it's always something that's in the forefront of my mind, because I mean it is to some degree instinctive. To this point I kind of know what fits on a page and what doesn't. But there's still always the going back over the script after I've kind of put down a first draft and going, ooh, that's, I have an establishing shot of a stadium and an establishing shot of Grand Canyon both on the same page. That's a lot to ask for. And sort of moving,
I can hear your artist crying from
I know,
here.
And moving things around. I was doing that just last night on a script I was working on, just moving this panel up, this panel back, just fine-tuning it that way, because I know that, you know, what fits on a page and what doesn't. And it's just something that you learn by osmosis and learn by doing. So we can talk more about that at a future point, but I think we're running out of time here this time. So let's wrap up.
Okay, I screwed up the sign-off now like 3 times. I'm Daphna, and this is...
Mark Wade.
And you've been listening to...
Mark Wade is Evil, or, yeah, 15 Minutes with Wade. We will see you next week.
Bye.